Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
Hi, Fred. It's Diana Deeney.
Hi, Diana. It's good to talk to you again. It's I think our first session recordings over the summer. And thanks so much for jumping in with the other folks and keeping the show going. And
absolutely, they're a pleasure to talk to. It's always fun to get together with the other Speaking Reliability co-hosts. It was good.
Well, I just brought on a new co-host, Mojan Sohai, I think is how she pronounces her last name. Lots of energy, lots of experience, and I'm figuring the two of you just would have a blast. And got another co-host in the room, so to speak. But
I look forward to talking with her.
Okay, and then Kirk, he said he was listening, I think, to the AI one that I think you and Chris did, or maybe it was you and Carl, which ended up getting a whole lot of comments and stuff on LinkedIn when we put that out recently. And they, Kirk was like, I want to be the third person in there because they weren't asking the right questions and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, well, we might just have to do that.
Okay.
Kirk is always a talk about opinions, but it might make for an interesting way to make it work.
Yeah, we dabbled in. I talked with Greg Hutchins a couple times, and it was more about the future of work and how AI is disrupting the way we do work and our employment and everything. And I did see that Chris and Carl were talking about AI with FMEA. So
there's been a few topics out there that's garnering a little attention, and I. Not by design, but anything. It's that future of work. And I saw an article, I think it was Wall Street Journal, that talked about all these CEOs that are being able to offset the expenses of tariffs by slashing headcount. And they're not hiring college hires because AI can do a lot of the basic coding and stuff like that. And they're not hiring, or they're letting go lots of their customer service teams because they're using AI instead. And I've got an issue with that for a couple of reasons.
Let's get into it.
All right. Well, a company to remain unnamed for all kinds of reasons will become clear in a moment is... I had have a product. I needed some help with it. You know, and I go online and it's kind of like, oh, if you have this, this, and this call, you know, here's a chat, or you need customer support. And I was like, right. So they had a little chat window there, and I thought, okay, I can check email while I wait for this. And I don't know if I don't talk in AI language or what, but maybe if it wanted me to find what's the phone number to call AI, that was the only question, or call the company, it was the only question it actually understood and answered. It was just off the rails. And I say, I'm having a trouble with this connecting to Wi-Fi, you know, this product connecting to the Wi-Fi network. And it was not verbatim at all, not to give away the company, but it was, have you restarted your router?
That's consistent with what we've experienced with call-in centers.
But I'm using that example just to shield what company this is and what industry it is.
Right.
Yeah, because even in-person ones where they're reading just the script and they're not allowed to come off the script, it's bad enough. Yet here's one that it's touted as being AI. And I'm thinking, why doesn't it have the basic understanding of what the question is and give me an answer that's relevant to that? And you know, it was a question about ABC and it answered G. And I'm like, what? And I rephrased it. And I don't understand that. And rephrased it again. And I think you might be having problems. Yeah, that's why I'm chatting with you. Maybe it was more specific to my personal state. But
maybe that was a nice way to say, let's go back to the beginning.
Right. And so after 10, 15 minutes of going in circles with this thing, it's like, no. And then So I called and I got the equivalent of an hi, I'm an AI bot and I will help you redirect your call to the appropriate person. That was 10 minutes of total frustration. And so I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to get a hold of these people? So I tried everything in the book. I want to talk to an agent. I need to talk to a representative. I need to talk to a human. And I finally got the message across and somebody came on the line and I says, your AI system chat and phone tree is as bad as I've ever experienced ever from any kind of customer support. This is absolutely ridiculous. And they said, yeah, I know, but I'm the only one left now. And it was after an hour wait. Your call is important to us. You know, repeat it every 5 minutes. And I was like, oh my God. So meanwhile, my wife is trying to get a hold of a company that they shipped one item out of five and charged for all five. And online it says status is in processing, is processing. And at least she got a hold of real people after just totally giving up on the AI chat system. And they said, well, AI says it's processing. There's nothing I can do about it. Their database, I should say, says it's processing, so we can't do anything about it.
Like, oh, they were locked out of making any changes?
Yeah, or doing much of anything once it got to that status. And I'm like, okay, this has been 3 weeks. Why did you charge for it and not ship it?
Right.
Kind of thing. So anyway, customer support in this household have not gone well this month. So that's the gist of it. But the more important part of it is that customer support is the interface with customers that you have that have a question or have a problem.
Right.
And I have learned from experience that the ones that treat that with gold gloves, you know, the white glove treatment, and that you are one of our customers that took time to tell us something or ask us a question, tend to get better customer loyalty, that get information about how to make their products better.
Similar along the lines, my parents are changing their television access company. Mm-hmm. So they're not super tech savvy, so they're not getting anything like a Fire Stick or YouTube, mm-hmm. TV or anything.
Right.
So they needed a dish network or cable, something that was still familiar.
Right.
And you know, these kind of changes are big changes because they're just very disruptive. And so, you know, as you plan to try to do things, you know, a tech came out and made changes, made sure everything was okay. But then, you know, a half an hour after he left, the phone was dead.
Oh, wow.
And then the cell phone died while my mom was on hold with them.
Right.
And, you know, it was just a confluence of things that were happening that we worked through. But she was so frustrated with the whole experience that she was like, you know, I really don't even know if I want this anymore, if I want to continue. But everybody that I've talked with has been so nice and so helpful, mm-hmm. and so friendly. So I'm going to give it another chance.
Yeah.
So it was the customer service that kept her in the loop with this new company, this new service that she decided to go with instead of just calling it quits and canceling it all. Yeah. So it is important.
It is. I mean, on the other spectrum of, you know, great customer service is every now and then I have a problem and I give Apple a call for an issue I'm running into. And if the first phone call doesn't solve it right off the bat, they usually escalate it. And then at that point, that person has, once they understand what it is that I'm trying to solve, I think one of them was my webinars were crashing. As you know, just as I'm starting to launch into get the webinar started, it would crash. And
nice.
Was it the presentation software? Was it the operating system? Was it the webinar service? They had no idea. Everybody's pointing at each other. And this one woman said, I am going to take this project on until you get a solution. And she said, I am on, you know, my weekend is these days. I'll call you at, it was 8 o'clock on Tuesday, work for you. And she called at 8 o'clock and said, here's the things to try. Here's some more study I did. Have you, what other experiences you had? And stayed with it for about 3 weeks till we got kind of an idea of what to solve on it. But that was over the top from what I expected.
Yeah. Did you write in anything for that person, or it was just a job? It was a job well done. And I'm sure she wasn't looking for anything, but
yeah. And you get the after, and I almost never do the, you know, I did on the one I got from this other company's let off with is what we'd like to hear about your experience with our new AI chat system. And I'm like, what a piece of
zero.
You should never have done this. This is absolutely worthless. And didn't hear anything back on that yet. And it goes to that idea is that when somebody does a really good job, you really need to comment on it too. So I did with the Apple one that I did. That was months and months ago. Yet I still talk about it. It was so good.
And you know, with these systems, Undercover Boss, do you ever see that TV show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So these are systems that are supposed to be customer facing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these things are for services or items that a lot of people use. So you would even think, you know, you can call into your own quality or a customer service program and kind of test it out, see what it's like, and realize it's zero stars across the board. I mean, it's not hard to test, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's right. Unless you have a really smart customer service center that says, you know, the CEO's phone number is this, that goes to this line.
But, you know, I've had a chance over the years, a couple times to talk with Scott Abel. Now, he is information content management, and he's one of the minds behind the Content Wrangler. But he is all about that customer interface and user instructions and communicating with the users. And so he's very much, I mean, this is not a surprise, how these systems would be used. And for years, he's been promoting, building up to being able to use these capably. And it all has to do with the information management on the back end. And just like you're designing something to have good reliability or design something to have good quality manufacturability, the information that you have about your product, both internal and customer facing, also needs to be intentionally managed. And if you're smart about it, if you have the strong foundation, then, you know, using AI to help with customer service is a great idea. I think somebody did a study where they had customer service, they had humans as customer service, and then AI. Mm-hmm. And the users, like you and me calling in for help, they didn't really care if it was a human or if it was an AI as long as it solved their problem.
Right.
So when you have these AI systems built on a whole lot of nothing, where it just sends the users around in loops, you know, that's going to be really frustrating. So you have to build that first.
Well, yeah, Diane got the one where it was in a loop, and then after 30 minutes, it just disconnected her, sent her back to the homepage.
Yeah.
What? And then had no memory of the conversation when she went back to it and like, I'm giving up on this.
Yeah.
So you're right, though. It's what it's trained on and how it's focused and stuff. And that's the same with people in person, too. As I've had some, you know, the example I think all of us had. Have you restarted your modem? The cable from the pole is laying on the ground. I don't think my modem has anything to do with this.
I can lick my fingers and connect the endpoints.
That's right. It's like, no. And they just were on a script and they were judged on being on the script. And at one point, it was one of the divisions I worked with or in a company that was their customer support center went, had a program where design managers and design engineers could sit in on calls. They'd sit there for like a day or half a day or whatever it was, and just listen in on actual calls people were making about the types of issues they were having and how they explained them and stuff like that. And it was a way to get the design team in touch with what customers are frustrated with and what kinds of questions they have. Yet one of the takeaways was this one director of engineering came back and said, there's a whole lot of really good information there. How come we don't hear about this? How come we don't get this tabulated or fed back to us? And they said, well, they're a cost center. That's how they're being treated in this organization. So it took getting to a vice president to say, we need customer support to actually understand our product well enough. So the design team was willing to train them on how a product works, what's the concept of operation, get them up to speed as to how would somebody describe a problem and what would that connect to, and whether that needed to be immediately escalated or here's a way to solve that or to further troubleshoot it. But more importantly is the design team wanted to know what was causing problems. How did we miss that in the design process? And once they got that set up, which took not hiring the cheapest customer service people, they needed engineering level type folks and technician level folks, not just minimum wage filling a seat for a couple of hours. And once they get them up in training, two things happen. One is the turnover in the customer service hall, I think is what they called it. You know, when you're talking to somebody in a crowded room with a bunch of headsets.
Yeah.
Is the turnover rate plummeted. People actually felt like they were contributing to the customer and to the organization. And customers, instead of tracking minutes per call, and they had a target, whichever was always getting smaller. It used to be no more than 10 minutes, and then it went to 8 minutes. And then they kept trying to turn over as many calls per person as they could, was their metric. And financially, the bean counters were happy with that. I don't need as many people there to take the number of calls. So they changed the metric to first call solves the problem. What's the proportion of times that it actually solves the problem? And they measured it by, does the customer call back? And I thought, well, there's a little bit of fuzziness in there, because if they're really pissed off, they will never call back and they will never buy our products again. So that you got to be careful how you set up that metric. Yet some of the calls would take 20, 30, 40 minutes and they would solve the problem. And then they would also, I think they also had, customer feedback. How did that call go for you? Stuff like that. And that changed dramatically. And eventually, I never did find out, I figured that level of investment in customer support would probably turn into customer satisfaction and loyalty to repurchases. It would take some time for that to manifest.
Yeah.
And my whole involvement was, why don't you just make the product so it's reliable and they don't have to call the customer support?
Yeah. Yeah, but you still need, no matter what, you still need customer support.
Yeah. Well, there's some questions where, like, where's the on-off switch? How do I turn this thing on? And then sometimes HP. And even Carly, our CEO at the time, said, why is the on-off switch different at every product that we make? Why do you decide to, you have to hide it someplace? What's wrong with the on-off switch right front and center where the product is? And because there was a support line that was called a CEO, and that was one of the top five call volume reasons people called, how do I turn this thing on?
I have another experience over the summer. I don't think we've talked since then. I had my car, a hatchback. Mm-hmm. I loved it, but it had one of those turbo boost engines in it.
Okay, so this sounds past tense. I'm so sad about the car now.
It was frustrating because I was 3,000 miles over 60, so 63,000 miles. 60 mm-hmm. was the warranty cutoff.
Okay.
And my engine, I mean, it was the whole engine needed to be replaced because the engine block was leaking coolant into the cylinder.
Well, that's explosive. That after your power, yeah.
After going to my, you know, I don't normally go to the dealership. There's a mechanic that I like, and mm-hmm. so after going through some troubleshooting with that, and I take it to the dealership, and I find out it's a known design issue. So they knew it was going to happen.
And they're just lucky it was after 60,000.
Yeah, and I'm 3,000 miles, but so I call customer service just to see, you know, because it's expensive to change out a motor. You know, do you offer any kind of out of warranty assistance for this? You know, like would they help me with this at all, or am I just going to be charged the whole shebang? And they asked me a series of questions like, do you have our app installed? And, you know, a few other questions.
Whether your car works or not.
Yeah. And then they went away for about 3 minutes and they came back and said, we're sorry, we can't offer you any out of warranty assistance. And I said, well, what is the metrics against which you measured that? Because you asked me a lot of questions. And they said, I'm sorry, I can't tell you that. It's proprietary. Well, you know that.
Are you just a super added customer?
Fuel to the fire, yeah. And then I was, so, you know, I was talking to somebody that was very nice, and they had a little bit of empowerment to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried a few other things, and I called back again, and they said, well, you know, they said, so we're really sorry. We understand it's disappointing, and you know, you can call the highway, National Highway Institute, and submit a complaint. I'm like, okay.
Oh, geez. That's a black
hole.
So
now, so you know, I got to talk with people and they were trying to be helpful. But then on the back end of it, you know, and I kind of understand the company's standpoint too. You know, it's past warranty.
I
was
convenient.
Upset because, yeah, it was a known design issue.
And, right. And what did you buy, a similar model or the same brand?
I will never buy that brand ever again.
That's,
I kind of walked the bridge and then threw the match behind me. And I got a really nice truck now.
There you go.
From a different company. But
well, it's they're going to save $20,000 and lose a lifetime customer.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, but their metric is this quarter, you know, it really is. And it, that's, and the investment, going back to the AI type stuff, it's the new shiny object. And if you take a relatively poor cost marginal, you know, customer support service and automate it, whether it's a fancy cult tree, you know, phone tree type thing that you have to go through the 18 menus and none of them describe what you want, or a AI generated script that's allegedly able to, you know, understand the question, and it's done poorly because you cheaped it out and said, hey, company, can you do this for us for $10? And they slap something in there. Oh, we're AI now. If it's a, and it's the same in maintenance. If you have a poor maintenance program in your factory and you slap a computer system on top of it, it'll still be bad.
Yeah.
So it's not a unique to AI. Yet I think your point is that if you've got a good system that really does work with your customers and supports your customers' objectives and all these other benefits from it, so that in the scenario with your car is you remain a loyal customer because customer service was so good, then you can automate parts of that and it will be okay. It will work well. But it's just slapping AI on there so you can fire 1,000 people is not a good idea.
No.
It's the wrong motivation.
Yeah, you need that foundation. And I guess a viewpoint of changing customer service from a cost center to an integral part of your company.
Yeah, Yeah, no, there's lots of stories. It's not AI's fault. It's the machine. It's the thinking and process of what constitutes good. And if it's frustrating your customers, well, the ones I ran into recently really did that pretty quickly. But anyway, I have a plan today, begrudgingly. Another item in my house is not working as it should, and I've done everything I can to figure it out, even on Reddit, which had lots of good advice, and it all comes down to call customer support. Dreading that. So that's on my calendar today. So wish me luck. Might be another rant later.
Okay.
Appreciate that. But, you know, if you're listening to this, I haven't run into a good AI system yet in customer support. And given my track record lately, I'm hesitant to even try. I'll do everything online I possibly can. And maybe that's the secrets that people are doing is like, solve it yourself. But if you've got a good story of what's working or not working, or if you got to want to extend a rant over to us, let us know. Head over to AscendoReliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. And Diana and I and the rest of the hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. And I did get two questions this morning that I got to add to the queue here someplace, but I really had to get this customer service thing off my chest.
Well, good luck with the next one. Yes.
Yeah, maybe third time's a charm. I'll never use my phone again. But so anyway, thanks so much, Diana, for letting me rant about that a little bit. And at least there's some glimmer of hope that some are good out there.
Yeah, and thanks for letting me rant about my car.
There you go.
All things work out in the end eventually.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.